A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking about the state of the presidential election and the campaigns, particularly the Harris-Walz campaign and Kamala Harris's continued refusal to answer the questions that she's asked when she bothers to sit down for an interview. This is something that even Harris supporters are now starting to take note of and starting to worry about. Interestingly enough, at the New York Times, there's a new column, The Political Cost of Kamala Harris Not Answering Direct Questions. This piece, authored by Todd Purdom, former White House correspondent, Los Angeles bureau chief for The Times, he doesn't come right out and say that he's supporting Kamala Harris, but it's pretty clear from the column that he's worried that Harris's reticence to answer questions could end up costing her the election. He writes, it's a shibboleth of modern political strategy that candidates should answer the questions they want to, not the ones that are asked. And Ms. Harris faces a unique challenge in this truncated presidential race of introducing herself to an electorate that in many ways still barely knows her. So she might be forgiven, he writes, for leading with a blizzard of atmospheric biographical detail that makes some voters feel they can't trust her to answer a direct question. But in a campaign in which Donald Trump fills our days with errant nonsense and dominates the national discussion, and polls show a tight race where Ms. Harris is running behind Joe Biden's level of support in 2020 with some groups, the vice president can't afford to stick only to rehearsed answers and stump speeches that might not persuade voters or shape what America is talking about. So, yeah, again, I think it's fair to say that Purdom is bagging Harris in this race, right? I think he does set up. I'm not sure that Purdom's actually identified why Harris is so reluctant to take questions. He says, for instance, if Ms. Harris thinks that the press just wants to play gotcha, and believe me, she has a point, then take questions from everyday voters, even hostile ones in town halls. He writes, the single best moment of John McCain's 2008 campaign came when he firmly shut down a questioner who called Barack Obama an Arab. Ms. Harris's answers would surely show more than just how she thinks on her feet. They could show what excites her, touches her heart, makes her mad, inspires her vision. Her convention speech and debate performance have already shown how well she could do with diligent preparation. There's no reason to assume that she wouldn't get steadily better on the fly with practice, which, by the way, is an acknowledgement that she sucks when she is forced to go off script, right? As an example of where he thought Harris has seen some improvement, or at least shown some improvement, he talks about the sit-down interview that she did on Tuesday with reporters from the National Association of Black Journalists. Purdom writes that she effectively reversed the order of her answer to the Philadelphia anchor on the economy, starting with her policy plans, then her biographical bona fides. She answered a question about whether she felt safe on the campaign trail with a crisp, "I do," but then pivoted to say that she understood how many Americans without the privilege of Secret Service protection did not feel safe. Yeah, and what does she want to do about that? Well, again, she wants to make it harder for people to protect themselves, right? And that's the problem. In that same sit-down interview on Tuesday, Harris was asked, I thought, a decent question. It wasn't the one that I would have asked, but then again, I have probably 20 questions that are gun-related that I would like to ask Kamala Harris. The reporter asked, okay, so you've talked a lot about banning assault weapons. I don't think she used air quotes. But what about handguns, she said? You know, assault weapons, she said, are used in, you know, some pretty high profile crimes, but handguns are the weapon of choice for criminals. So what do you want to do about handguns? And Kamala Harris started by, you know, repeating the same talking point she always does, right? Well, let me say, first of all, that I'm a gun owner. Tim Walz is a gun owner. We're not interested in taking anybody's guns away, but we do need to ban assault weapons. And the reporter said, okay, yeah, we're not talking about that. We're talking about handguns. And then Kamala Harris said, well, I'm getting to that. And she started talking about universal background checks. And she claimed that, you know, many homicides are committed by people who go to flea markets and buy guns from gun dealers who aren't required to register their sales. That's what she said. She got it completely wrong, as we pointed out at Bearing Arms yesterday. Federally licensed firearms retailers, the same rules apply to them, whether they're selling a firearm from their brick-and-mortar store whether they are operating from their home, whether they're operating online, or they're operating at a gun show. If you are an FFL, you are required to put your buyers through a background check. Now, if you're not an FFL, if you're just a gun owner selling a firearm or two from your personal collection, until recently, you were allowed to do that without question. Kamala Harris didn't really get into this executive action that Joe Biden has taken, with the ATF promulgating this rule to expand who is engaged in the business of selling firearms. Now, the ATF has tried to broaden that definition to the point that you don't even actually have to sell a gun to be considered engaged in the business of dealing in firearms. Simply offering a firearm for sale for any amount of profit, even if it's as little as a penny, would be enough, according to the ATF, to qualify you as an unlicensed gun dealer, someone who should have an FFL. And if you, again, offer a firearm for sale or sell a firearm, and the government says, well, you're a gun dealer, where's your federal firearms license? You're looking at federal felony charges. Now, that rule has been put on hold in several states, and for all Gun Owners of America members, thanks to a federal judge in Texas, and the case is being litigated. I think it's going to be another case where the ATF is deemed to have overreached its legitimate authority and essentially creating new law instead of promulgating a rule. But that remains to be seen. But Harris didn't talk about that at all. She, again, offered the sort of word salad, incorrectly stating what the process is and what the law currently is for background checks. And I think that's one of the reasons why Harris doesn't want to answer these questions. No, I don't think she wants to try to explain her shifting positions on any number of issues, including her support for a mandatory buyback of so-called assault weapons that she endorsed 5 years ago. But I think also, you know, these unscripted questions, Harris doesn't really do that well. And it's not because she's just a bad public speaker. It's because she doesn't have a firm command of the issues. Remember, Kamala Harris is ostensibly in charge of the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. This is part of her portfolio. She should know how the current law works. And either she has no clue or she intentionally misled reporters and those listening to her response about background checks. She also, by the way, was wrong when she said that a majority of homicides or a large number of homicides are driven by people who illegally acquire firearms at gun shows. As we pointed out at Bearing Arms yesterday, there was a 2016 study by the DOJ talking to federal inmates who were either arrested for illegal gun possession or used a gun in the commission of a crime for which they were sentenced. And according to that survey, more than half of those inmates said that they obtained their firearm through theft. Another 43% said they got their gun on the black market. Less than 1%, 0.8% of those inmates said that they got a gun at a gun show. And that, by the way, that 0.8% would include people who were not prohibited by law at the time from purchasing a firearm, right? So closing the gun show loophole, which is what Kamala Harris talked about yesterday, would really do nothing to stop criminals from acquiring firearms. So that's, again, an issue, right? In terms of, you know, a crime-fighting public safety strategy. Now, it would also, I think, run afoul of our constitutional rights because it would amount to a gun registry. And that is a huge problem. But Kamala Harris doesn't want to talk about that. I don't think she can talk about that. Purdom says, Harris seems fearful of explaining the shifts in her views since her failed 2020 presidential campaign. In her debate with Mr. Trump, she said she wanted to and then largely didn't. I'm not sure, he says, she should be so worried. She's had nearly 4 years in office in which her theoretical thinking on topics from fracking to gun control to Medicare for all has evolved in practice. One person's flip-flop is another's proof of a statewoman's maturation. Why not own it? Well, what if she didn't really flip? I mean, that's a problem, right? Because one of the things that she said, again, her campaign says, well, no, she no longer supports mandatory buybacks of assault weapons. Okay. But in her interview with the National Association of Black Journalists on Tuesday, and that same question about, you know, what should we do about handgun violence, Harris said, you know, Tim Walz and I, we're not taking anybody's guns away, but I fully support an assault weapons ban. because these guns, she said, that are designed to kill many people in a short amount of time do not belong in the streets of a civil society. So if you don't want to confiscate those firearms, but you don't think that those guns belong in a civil society, then what exactly are you saying? Because we've got 20 million plus semi-automatic long guns in this country that are lawfully owned, and you say you don't think that we should be able to own them. But you also, well, your campaign says that you're no longer interested in a mandatory buyback, quote unquote, of these same firearms. So what exactly are you saying, Kamala? Right? Those are two contradictory positions here. And I don't think Kamala Harris wants to have to answer that question, because I don't think she has a good answer. You know, 5 years ago, Kamala Harris said she thought it was a good idea to have mandatory buybacks. Now, her campaign says, apparently, it's no longer a good idea. Why? Now, I know why, but I want to know why Kamala Harris supposedly believes it's no longer a good idea to have a mandatory buyback of semi-automatic firearms, when she also says that those firearms don't belong in a civil society. Because it sounds to me like she wants to do something with the tens of millions of lawfully possessed semi-automatic rifles, shotguns, and pistols that she would deem, quote-unquote, assault weapons. And again, I don't think she has a good answer, which is why I don't think it matters if the questions are coming from the National Association of Black Journalists or voters at a town hall. In fact, those questions coming from voters, maybe even worse for Kamala Harris, because Harris can always, again, play the victim card, right? She goes, the press is out to get me. I don't buy it. But if you're talking to voters and they ask a legitimate and tough question about your supposedly evolving policy, what are you going to do? You're going to complain about, well, these voters were too hard on me. I mean, that's not going to go well. Now, I think Harris has boxed herself in here. I don't think she wants the American people to know where she really stands on these issues. I think she is trying to reinvent herself as some sort of moderate. Again, she's claiming that her values remain the same. And I guess I take her at her word. When it comes to the right to keep and bear arms, her values have always been that the right to keep and bear arms doesn't really matter. Right? 2007, yeah, we talked about this yesterday. Again, at Bearing Arms, when she was the district attorney in San Francisco, she said, listen, just because you're a legal gun owner and you've got your guns in your locked house doesn't mean we can't walk in and make sure that they're stored properly. I mean, that's not just contempt for the Second Amendment, that's contempt for the Fourth Amendment, too. The following year, she signed on to an amicus brief arguing that there was no individual right to keep and bear arms protected by the Second Amendment. And instead, the Second Amendment only protected the right to carry arms in a militia. And she defended Washington, D.C.'s handgun ban. So Kamala Harris's values when it comes to the right to keep and bear arms are that you don't have the right to possess one in your home. She, in 2022, called the Bruin decision, contrary to common sense, it said it defies common sense and the Constitution. So she apparently doesn't believe that you have the right to bear arms either. Those are her values when it comes to the Second Amendment. Those are Kamala Harris's own words. And every time she sits down for an interview, she runs the risk, however minor it might be, that the press would ask her a legitimately tough question about those values that she holds when it comes to this fundamental civil right. So, under normal circumstances, Purdom's advice to a presidential candidate of, hey, answer the freaking questions already, might make some sense. But for Kamala Harris, it doesn't. Her best strategy really is to run out the clock, to say as little as possible, to do as few of these interviews as possible, to cross her fingers and hope to God that nobody asks her a tough question about her support for bans on semi-automatic firearms, her support for, you know, ignoring the Fourth Amendment right to be secure in your person and property, and to just stroll right into the homes of gun owners just to make sure that they're storing their guns appropriately, right? Every time she sits down with a reporter, or if she dares to do a town hall, she runs the risk of being asked about things that she doesn't want to talk about. because she doesn't want to be honest with the American people. That's my opinion anyway. Because I think she believes, if she's honest with the American people about where she stands, about what those values really represent, it's going to hurt her chances of becoming president. So again, Purdom's advice, under normal circumstances, sure. But for the Harris campaign, no, I think she's going to continue to dodge, duck, and weave her way around answering these legitimate questions right up until Election Day. And it's going to be up to us to point out the things that she doesn't want to talk about. All right, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. Economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your your IRA and your 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder the central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. If you haven't thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree that physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That is GOLDEN, and just text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. All right. Today's recidivist report, not a true recidivist report. We are talking about first-time offenders here. It's another case out of California. We talked about yesterday this sentence, attempted murder, 5 years in prison. With time off for good behavior, probably 2.5 years for attempted murder. And meanwhile, there was an aggravated assault with a firearm, probation in California. Well, we got another one of these things. Here's the headline. Cal Poly student who shot guns on campus sentenced to jail. Let this serve as a lesson. I mean, it's not much of a lesson when you actually learn the sentence here. So there were two 20-year-olds. Who were arrested last year for shooting on the campus of Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. Charles Hojaboom and Brandon Pham. They were arrested when they were in possession of a shotgun, a pistol, and a knife. Officers found a nearby campus sign with bullet holes. According to the San Luis Obispo Tribune, text and video show that the two students shot guns on campus at least four times, including into the ceiling of Hojaboom's dorm room. Now, to me, that's the most egregious offense here. If they were shooting in a place where there's a, you know, safe backstop, something of that nature, not really an issue. Shooting into the ceiling of a dorm room, then you really got to worry about the potential of harming somebody else, right? Hojaboom and Pham posted bail the day after they were arrested on November 12th of last year. Hojaboom was taken back into custody in December of last year after a court hearing in which the judge found Hojaboom to be a danger to the public and increased his bail to no bail. They were both charged with four counts of possession of a loaded firearm on a college campus, possession of a knife on a college campus, discharging a firearm with gross negligence with a sentencing enhancement for a serious felony, and shooting at an inhabited dwelling. Hojaboom also charged with misdemeanor possession of tools with intent to commit vandalism, and Pham was charged with misdemeanor possession of a stun gun on a college campus. The two pleaded not guilty in January, but Pham changed his plea to no contest to three felony counts of possession of a loaded firearm on a college campus, as well as felony shooting at an inhabited dwelling on August 14th. His other charges were dismissed. So Pham was sentenced on Wednesday. Hojaboom, by the way, has been basically his question about his competency. A judge ordered a competency hearing, and there's a result of that hearing is coming up later this month. But Pham was sentenced this week, and he got 210 days in jail, along with 2 years of probation and 60 hours of community service. His defense attorney had asked for probation in lieu of state prison time, and asked for the minimum jail time of 180 days. Saying that Pham was clearly remorseful and taking accountability for his actions, said that there was no intent to harm anyone, no one was actually harmed. San Luis Obispo County Deputy District Attorney Blaine Blumenthal said that, Pham should serve probation instead of state prison, but he wanted 270 days in jail, which was the term recommended by the probation officer. He said he understood that while Pham was remorseful, his actions were extremely reckless and had the potential to kill someone. Now, again, California has all types of gun control laws on the books, right? 10-day waiting periods. You can only own certain handguns that are approved by the state of California. You've got your background checks for ammunition and firearms. You've got very restrictive policies regarding concealed carry, even though these states may issue laws, may have gone away. And again, you've got your so-called assault ban. We could be here for an hour just talking about all the gun control statutes that California has on the books. And yet here's somebody who did something that's supposedly pretty serious, right? They brought a gun illegally onto a college campus. They discharged that firearm illegally on a college campus on multiple occasions, including once into the ceiling of their dorm room. And even the prosecutor says, prison's not appropriate. Just a short stay in the county jail, a couple of years of probation, and that's fine. The Tribune says, with good behavior, Pham is expected to serve 105 days in custody. And if he chooses to apply for alternative sentencing, he may be eligible for house arrest in lieu of jail. I don't know about you. That seems a little odd to me. You know, again, California has so many laws in place that are designed to inhibit the simple possession of firearms by individuals who are not prohibited from owning them, right? Just trying to exercise their Second Amendment rights. And yet here's somebody who pretty clearly was reckless, at the very least, with their firearm, pleaded guilty or no contest to multiple felonies, and the state, not just the judge, but the prosecutor in this case, says, not really that big a deal. I don't know about you. I think it's kind of a bigger deal than what the prosecutor makes it out to be. And rather than, again, focusing on people who violate these laws, the state of California wants to put more restrictions, they want to create more crimes out of our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. And then go after those otherwise lawful gun owners, right? While excusing away the actions of people like Mr. Pham. All right, today's armed citizen story from San Antonio, Texas, where a shootout at a local shopping mall left a car burglar with a gunshot wound to his face. The burglars picked the wrong family to target. According to the San Antonio News Express, it was about 5 p.m. Tuesday afternoon. There was a family walking out of the shopping center, and they saw a 35-year-old man and a 28-year-old woman who were burglarizing their vehicle. Now, they didn't immediately pull out their guns. In fact, the burglars pointed guns at the family first, according to a police report. And that's when the family's husband and son, who were also lawfully armed, drew their pistols, fired their guns at the two burglars, quote, several times, according to police. The 35-year-old man who was breaking into the car suffered a gunshot wound to the face, according to the San Antonio News Express. The thieves then drove away shortly after the shooting. They were dropped off at a local hospital by other people. The 28-year-old woman arrested on outstanding misdemeanor warrants. According to the San Antonio News Express, San Antonio police did not confirm if the wounded man has been arrested, but once he's released from the hospital, he will be facing charges. The family, father and son, acting in self-defense after guns were pointed at them, not arrested, not charged. I don't think that they will be, but we'll keep our eyes open for any more details as they become available. And finally today, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a Oklahoma City resident who was able to save the lives of several of his neighbors after an apartment fire. Scary stuff. According to KFOR in Oklahoma City, it was Wednesday morning, just before 3 a.m., Ethan Holloway, he saved his neighbors. He actually was just visiting the apartment complex, visiting friends there, or I guess a family. And he said, I was drinking a few, and I saw a fire. So he said he ran over to the apartment complex, got to work getting people out, had to kick in a few doors. He said, if you feel violated, I'm sorry, but get out. There's a fire, I'm sorry. Like, who are you? I'm nobody. But there's a fire. Get out of the apartment, he said. Holloway not only was able to save several residents, he was able to save several pets as well. He said, I think one lady left three cats in there. I got the cats out. He said, hey, man, that cat was mean. That was a mean cat. But I got baby out of the apartment. According to KFOR, firefighters faced several challenges in taking on the fire. There were several gates, tight spaces they had to get to. Battalion Chief Jeff Chappell with the Oklahoma City Fire Department says flames were coming out. They were actually higher than the building. So we got a quick knockdown on that and got water on it in a hurry. The fire spread through the apartment's HVAC system. Chappell said there's a big hollow area. You can imagine it runs from the first floor to the second floor. And when that happened, the fire spread to all of the units upstairs and downstairs. So there are a number of people who are displaced. I mean, they've lost their belongings. They have nowhere to live. But they still have their lives, in large part because of the quick thinking and fast actions of Ethan Holloway, who may have been drinking a few, but still had the presence of mind to call the fire department and then take action to save the folks in that apartment complex. So Ethan Holloway, the tip of the hat, and a toast later today. It's a little early for me right now, but later today I will definitely be toasting Ethan Holloway for doing the right thing there. And again, a very good deed on Holloway's behalf. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again next Monday for another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day, today, tomorrow, and over the weekend as well, as keeping you up to date on all of the latest secondary news and information. You've got the federal trial in East St. Louis over Illinois' gun and magazine ban. We are talking about the anti-gun candidates for New York City's mayor, trying to replace Eric Adams, maybe going from bad to worse as far as that goes. We've got more armed citizen stories for you at Bearing Arms as well. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Just use the promo code SAVEAMERICA. You can get a significant discount on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You get exclusive content and ad-free experience. You'll also be supporting the independent pro-segment of journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and that is critically important these days, so thank you again. Have a great few days until we meet up once more. Until then, be well. Be safe.